available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everybody, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the Scout 247 Network.
I'm Ryan Abraham with USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout 247 Network, and we are the Podcast of Champions talking Pac-12 football. Really, it was I call it streak week, Dave. It was a weekend where a couple streaks were extended in the Pac-12 and one was broken.
Yeah, it was also the weekend of like everything kind of going according to the way I thought through most of the early-ish games. Yes. And then completely falling apart and being nuts in the final games.
Yeah, it was. We'll go through all our picks. I think we were both 3-3, so kind of a blah. But I started off 3-0 in the morning and then 0-3 at night. But if you want to get a hold of us, pacfootballpodcast@gmail.com is our email. Our website is pacfootballpodcast.com. Very simple. You can tweet us on the Twitter at Pac-12 Podcast. And if you want to leave a voicemail, 641-715-3900, extension 734-972.
That's really long. It's just really long.
There's a lot. Yeah, we got to do the Google.
I think we got a voicemail, didn't we?
We did? Oh, I didn't look.
We got a simple voice box message 6 days ago.
Oh, man. So we're okay. We'll have that one. I'll have to queue that one up for you then.
All right. Well, cool. We can listen to that a little bit later on in the show. But we've got a lot of, I don't know if it was necessarily the most fun week ever in the Pac-12. I think there were some games that we thought might be a little bit better that ended up a little bit worse than we thought. But there was still a lot of excitement, a lot of, interesting stuff. And, frankly, a lot of, turning of the tables of kind of the narratives we had started to build. We're four games in now, and so we've got a little bit more data. And so we've had some movement in our power rankings, the all-important Podcast of Champions.
Yeah. Ranking. You know, it's hard, I think, early when they're playing out of conference games. It's like, how do you compare? And now, like, if you have one game in conference and, you know, one team that doesn't look very good beats a team you think is pretty good, well, they should probably be above them in the rankings, right? But then, you know, so there's a lot to kind of play with. So I think these definitely evolve as the year goes on. But I feel pretty good about where the rankings are now, where we feel like the strongest teams are from how they've looked on the field.
Yeah, I completely agree. So should we dive right into it, as they say?
Let's dive right in with our
Pac-12 Roundup.
Okay, so let's see. I think we're going to start at number 12. That's a good place to start. We start at the bottom. And our number 12 team, still,
Oregon State Beavers.
Mercifully, Oregon State did not play this week, so it didn't bring down what was already kind of a ho-hum week. They are going to take on Washington, which we'll get to in a little bit, next weekend. On Saturday, this is going to be a 5 p.m. kick on the Pac-12 Network in Corvallis. Quick preview of my preview. Oregon State's going to get killed, but we'll talk about it a little bit more later on.
All right, we'll talk about that one a little bit. Okay, so then we have coming in at number 11, we have
Arizona Wildcats.
And they, I'm sorry, we got to do both. And they took on
Utah Utes.
All right, so Utah came to Tucson, and I think in the preview we had both talked about this one as potentially one where Utah could maybe even run away with it, and they didn't exactly do that. This spread was Utah minus, I think we had it at 3.5, but it was anywhere from 3 to 4.
Yeah,
leading up to the game, Utah did cover, but it was a narrow one. They won 30-24. I watched every minute of this game, which starting at 10:30 Eastern. That was a decision. I'm not going to say it was a good decision. I'm not going to say it was a bad decision, but it was a decision I made. And it was a really, really weird game. I think if you're an Arizona fan, you can look at this one and say there were a ton of missed opportunities where Arizona could have won this. Brandon Dawkins threw a bunch of arm punts in this one that just kind of made it difficult for them to come back. But Utah, once Tyler Huntley went down at quarterback, he got tackled so hard, jammed his elbow right into the turf, and it seemed to have, you know, done something, maybe separated his shoulder. Troy Williams came in, and I thought Troy Williams was fine. He played fine, but they lost something that was like almost essential to their offense that you couldn't quite notice. But Huntley just brought an electricity to that position that Williams just doesn't necessarily have. And even though he ran the ball even a little bit more than Huntley did in this game, and he threw the ball reasonably well, the offense took a pretty sizable step back with him at the helm versus Huntley. And that was kind of the story of the game. Utah basically kind of had to hold on. And they created some plays, they did some things, but they had to hold on in the late going here. Arizona ran the ball reasonably well on them. 42 carries for 200 yards. Brandon Dawkins, I mean, he threw three picks. If any one of those doesn't happen, Arizona could have won this game. It was a close one. It was kind of a crazy deal towards the end of the game. Utah, I think it was, so Arizona had Dawkins, and he was driving towards the end of the game through a pick. I don't know. It was a weird and wild game. That's what it was. This was the one with the onside kick, where Arizona recovered the onside kick and then immediately fumbled it on the next play, with about, 2 minutes, 41 seconds to go. But they had every opportunity to win this, but, Utah kind of did enough to hold on.
Yeah, that was a fumble, but it didn't look like a fumble. But review didn't overturn it. The Arizona bench then got a penalty on that. It was just this kind of comedy of errors on the Arizona side. But there were some screw ups too on the Utah side. Kyle Willingham's kid is their long snapper, and he was god
awful.
He was terrible.
It was like he was snapping for a fake punt every single time because he kept hitting the up man.
Yeah. It was bad. Dawkins had a final interception to seal it. Arizona ended up having five turnovers, four of them by Dawkins. But, you know, Arizona had the top running offense in the conference. Utah had the top, rushing defense. So, you kind of felt this was going to be a, big collision there. It's funny. Arizona's 0-3 in their conference openers against ranked teams since they joined the Pac-10 back in 1978. So they've never opened the conference, with a win.
What a stat.
That's a pretty good one. I think I got it on Pac-12 Network or something. Shout out to Pac-12 Network, even though we make fun of you guys sometimes.
All the time.
So let's see. in our intro. So the Utah defense, I thought, brought a lot of good pressure. And I think the Arizona defense at first was kind of backing off, and they gave Tyler Huntley, a little bit more room. It was easier throws.
So many cushions.
He was so efficient early on. But then I think they brought up the intensity, and maybe it was more just when Troy Williams came in. But they were pressing a lot more. Williams definitely wasn't as efficient as Huntley was. Utah had a critical fumble late in the fourth quarter. It was an awesome one of those lawnmower rips by the Arizona defense. I thought that was a really good play. But then the Utah defense just forced a three and out, and they got a long punt return. So it was just like Arizona would do something good and then do some bad stuff too. So I don't know. There was like bad snaps, a bunch of turnovers. One of the Utah punt snaps hit the up man, which was weird. There's just a lot of weird stuff, but I think it was a gutty, gritty kind of win from Utah. They could have certainly won by more, but Arizona was in this too, and they could have won it.
Yeah, and I think if you're giving out a game ball, I think Utah's punter Mitch Wishnowski, he needs one, because there were two plays in this game. First, there was the first bad snap on the punt where he had to make the tackle, I think, on
It was
a long return. I can't remember exactly the circumstances. He had that, and then there was one of these snaps that was so errant towards the end of the game that he had to basically dive to his right to field it, and then somehow he still got the punt off.
Yeah. That was like game saving. Like that really was.
That one was really game saving because it was towards the end of the game. So I think he needs a game ball. Yeah, I mean, Utah had some trouble with Arizona actually in their brief series while Utah's been in the Pac-12. So getting this win is a big one for them. And I think if you're an Arizona fan, I mean, yeah, your guys shot themselves in the foot, but the offense seems to be clicking a little. Like, it seems to be that, you know, you can rely on that running game again, that it's in decent enough shape. And at this point, I think what you say if you're an Arizona fan, well, it's not going to be as bad as it was last year. This team is going to win a couple of Pac-12 games. Now, I don't know who they're going to beat, but they're going to win a couple of Pac-12 games. It's out there for them. And, you know, we'll see if Rich Rod's able to save his job. This game would have been critical for him. I think this one was eminently winnable. And if you win this one and you're 3-1, getting another three wins, getting to bowl eligibility, that's probably enough. But we'll see if they can swing that now. Yeah. So Arizona is off this week. Yeah. So they're on a bye.
And so is Utah.
And so is Utah. So
isn't that weird? Isn't that weird?
That worked out well. We won't have to talk about Utah now. Woo-hoo!
Yeah. yeah, hopefully. I haven't heard. I got any update on Tyler Huntley's injury. But
let's see if there's anything out there on the interwebs.
I didn't see it. But, it's kind of weird they both have a bye. So this is kind of the weird part where we're, like, previewing the games or, like, reviewing the games going in reverse order. But then you got to preview them basically when we get to the highest – ranked team of the two, then that's when we end up previewing the game. So they both have byes, so we don't have to do anything on this one.
Woohoo!
Nice.
Yep.
Okay, so should we move on?
Let's do it.
Okay. I don't know if you found anything on the injury, but
no, nothing.
Okay. So, our number, 10 team was on the road.
UCLA Bruins.
Late night. So, taking on
Stanford Cardinals.
Remember, I got to do two now, Dave.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, we're going to get this really smooth by about week 10 of the season. So somebody tweeted at us last week and said something about the disorganization being mind-blowing on the podcast. And, you know, we think it's one of the charms,
yeah.
Really. All right, so UCLA went at Stanford. This is another game where I stayed up. So it's Sunday. We're recording this Sunday. I was up until 4 in the morning my time finishing all the stuff from this game.
Wow.
So that was good. I was excited about that. Stanford beat the pee out of UCLA. Just beat them raw. This was a really, really weird game if you watched every minute of it. In the early going, it looked like there was no chance either of these teams was going to break like 25 points. And then in the second half, neither team could really stop the other one. Well, Stanford was able to stop UCLA, but UCLA really couldn't stop Stanford. Stanford had 5 second half drives and they scored touchdowns on every single one of them. This was a comprehensive beatdown. UCLA appears to have cured whatever was ailing the Stanford offense. So they knocked out Keller Christ, early on in this one. And, you hate to see that and the whole deal, but, Stanford might have found its quarterback because, you know, they tried out Ryan Burns for a while, and clearly he wasn't going to cut it. And then they went to KJ Costello, who both of you and I are pretty familiar with after yes. watching him in the high school circuit in L.A. for years and years. And he came in and looked like Kevin Hogan reincarnate. He was completing passes, virtually untouched by the pass rush, and he kind of brought some stability to that Stanford offense. And pretty much from his insertion on, Stanford just rolled. They racked up 400 total yards on the ground, 405 to be exact, 553 total yards. Costello himself was 13 of 19 for 123 yards and 2 touchdowns, which is fine. Nothing to get excited about, but if you watch the game, he really managed it well. He never looked in a hurry, never looked like he was pressing, just kind of looked like a competent Stanford quarterback. Again, he kind of looked like a Kevin Hogan. And UCLA, for its part, just can't stop a fart at this point. You know, they're pretty much going to struggle to defend against anybody. You know, we can't say anything definitively about the Stanford offense at this point because the only data points we have of them doing well this year are against a very bad Rice team and a very bad UCLA defense. So it remains to be seen if this is, you know, maybe the way the rest of the season goes for Stanford, but they at least appear to be maybe on the right track now. And for UCLA's part, it was just a miserable game. You know, Josh Rosen had one bad quarter, essentially. He kind of struggled in the first quarter, was sailing some balls a little bit, and with the present state of UCLA's football program, that was enough to basically cost UCLA much chance of winning this game. He needs to play pretty much perfectly in every single game if UCLA is going to have a chance, and he wasn't perfect, and so UCLA had no chance. And obviously that's no way to build a sustainable and winning program, to require your quarterback to play perfect football for you to actually even have a chance of winning a game, but that's the state of UCLA. Obviously that's not good.
So I got to watch this one in a local watering hole, in Hermosa, and get, you know, what's, I really enjoy being able to text with David during games, and we have some fun banter. I got this one wrong. Dave had this one right. It was kind of a weird. And the previous game we both were on Utah, and we won that one too. That was one of the ones we just really thought the line was bad, but still was pretty close. But it was, so UCLA's up 13-6 and they're like inside the five. And I'm like, oh man, I got this. I'm already up 14.5 points and they're about to go in. And then like, you know, I'm probably talking to my friends and I turn around and like Stanford's about to score and it's still 13-6. And I'm like, wait, what happened here? And Dave's like, oh yeah, that got blocked. I was like, oh man. Is that what happened? So it was like a block.
Not only that. So Rosen threw a dart to Theo Howard in the end zone. And Theo Howard just drops it. Oh. Like, not even really contested, just drops it. And then they go for the field goal, and it gets blocked. So they had two opportunities, essentially, to score in the red zone, came up empty. And then Stanford, at that point, Costello had had a drive to get in rhythm. So this was now his I think it was his second drive as the starter, or as the playing quarterback, and he drove him right down the field.
So he ended up, his first eight drives, seven touchdowns and a field goal. So he had that one bad drive where they only got a field goal, but you know.
Yeah. What a bum.
You put like, that's pretty good. And I feel better when we were talking about like who are the best like backup quarterbacks and stuff. I think it was a question last week and I'd mentioned KJ Costello before Burns, but I just thought he was a better quarterback. So I kind of liked it. They put Burns in and then, you know, Costello soon afterwards. And obviously he did well. I mean, but Bryce Love was a superstar, 30 carries, 263 yards. UCLA did not look all that interested in tackling him, or they just weren't very good at it.
No, yeah, the nobody on this team can tackle. And I mean, they just look so poorly coached. They look so poorly prepared for basically anything. For a team that recruits at the level UCLA does to look this inept on the field, I mean, that's just an indictment of the coaching staff. I mean, if you've got that kind of talent, yeah, either everyone in the world misevaluated every single one of these guys or you're not getting the most out of them, right? And I'm always going to lean more on blame the coaches than the players because, I mean, frankly, the players aren't paid money to do this. The coaches are.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, I think it's ridiculous to blame a bunch of, you know, 19, 20-year-old kids for what these coaches are paid so much money to do. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think they were put in a position to succeed, but I also just, you know, they missed a ton of tackles. They just, this was a horrible game. I mean, horrible for the defense. From top to bottom, they were awful. Safety play was awful. Linebacker play was awful. And it was really unwatchable, you know, for a high scoring game, really didn't have that, like, you know, fun back and forth element to it really at any point. And there were some like really egregious targeting calls on both sides.
Yeah.
That looked nothing like targeting. Darius Pickett had one where he like incidentally hit the guy in the ear because he was dropping his head as Pickett was coming in. And then Stanford had one that was much the same on the other side with, I think, Elijah Holder, where UCLA's receiver was dipping as the tackle was coming in, and you just, I mean, there's no way to not hit him. I mean, it's just, look, it's the sport, and yeah, the head injuries are a huge deal, and I don't think anyone is not taking it seriously, but I either remove tackling altogether and make this two-hand touch and just ruin the game, or, they need to reevaluate that rule, because otherwise you're just going to end up with, you know, nobody being able to really play, because I don't think there's a way for you to play a tackle sport where you're hitting guys as hard as they are, where you're playing at full speed, and you're not going to have essentially incidental head contact. And yeah, obviously there are plays where you have spearing and you have guys who are going for the head, and that'll happen, and that should be penalized. But, you know, I thought Mora, you know, he was talking about this a couple weeks ago, but I think it's a fair point. Figuring out something that's like the flagrant one, flagrant two system in basketball, I think that might make a lot of sense for this rule, because, you know, both of those fouls, fine, call them 15-yard penalties, whatever. It's incidental, but whatever. That's fine. But kicking guys out of the game for something that's, I mean, clearly an accident, clearly not something anybody was intending to do, it just seems foolish.
Yeah. Hey, one positive, my boy Soso Jumombo, 100 yards rushing.
He did. And he had one nice, like, 49-yard carry to, I think it was to open the game, or it was in the first, you know, couple of series for UCLA. So he was fine. UCLA just couldn't run the ball after a little while because they got so far down. But yeah, if they had, I mean, they actually ran the ball pretty well against Stanford, as you might expect, because Stanford's defense actually isn't that good. But yeah, anyway. So UCLA will now play another 7:30 Pacific time kick next Saturday, which is going to make me want to die. Colorado is coming to town for a whiteout, and this is on ESPN2, and we will talk about it a little bit more when we get to Colorado.
Okay. And then for Stanford, they're going to host Arizona State, who we have not talked about yet, so I guess we'll do we talk about that now, or I guess we'll talk about it when we get to Arizona State?
Yeah, I think we'll preview this one when we get to Stanford, essentially, because you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're going in order of the power rankings.
Okay, yeah, because I guess we go – okay, so yeah, we'll do that. All right. It's a little confusing, you know?
This is awful. I mean, awful. We got to figure out a better system. I feel like we had a better system last year, but we have since forgotten it because neither of us have a brain or a memory anymore.
And I did just real quick, I got to, you know, when I came home from the watering hole and I had a few adult beverages, I decided to listen to David Woods's broadcast. It wasn't that long. It was like 20 minutes or something, or 25 minutes or something. So I listened to that and gave him a shout out on the tweet. So I think you got some USC fans that probably listened to it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, you know, help you out a little bit. And
yeah. It's awesome. Yeah,
I thought it was kind of cool. Okay. So let's move. Next we have our, so that was UCLA was number 10. So our number 9 team taking a bit of a fall.
Oregon Ducks.
And they
take.
Yeah. And they took on
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Oh, God. We're never going to get this right.
By so we, you mean you or...
we need a better system. We need a better system. Or, like, you know, just prepare this in, like, the slightest way. Oregon was a 14.5-point favorite, and we were like, yeah, of course they're going to cover.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to cover. They look so good. And they not only didn't cover, they lost to Arizona State, 37-35. This was one of three Pac-12 games that was more or less concurrent on Saturday night because this league is terrible at scheduling things.
Yeah.
You know, ASU got out to a really early lead. They scored 17 points in the first quarter, and it took Oregon kind of a little while to get going offensively, and it really seemed like that kind of first quarter surge for ASU sort of sustained them for the rest of the game. They more or less hung on after that point. And I thought, you know, you've got to give a ton of credit to ASU's defense because they more or less, I think when you limit Oregon to 30 carries for 120 yards, you've essentially shut down Oregon's rushing attack.
Yeah.
Because that's shut down for them. Royce Freeman, 15 carries for 81 yards. That's a bad game for him. Tony Brooks James, one carry for 10 yards. Taj Griffin, one carry for 3 yards. I mean, it just wasn't, this wasn't a game where they really ever got in any kind of rushing rhythm. And, you know, it's interesting looking at, like, the way Willie Taggart calls a game, or the way, whatever, his staff calls a game versus the way, you know, Chip Kelly or Mark Helfrich calls the game. I think Oregon under those guys might have kept running a little bit more. But this one seemed more like they kind of leaned towards the pass more and more as the game went on. And I don't know that that's necessarily what Oregon can lean on at this point. I think Justin Herbert's great. I think he was very good in this game. But I would have liked to have seen him run it even more in the second half. And then ASU was fine. You know, they ran the ball, not well, but fine. And Manny Wilkins was good again. And, you know, we were about ready to write off ASU for the year, and I still think that they're in a lot of trouble going forward. But this was a nice home win. I don't think you can discount it too hard. It was a really nice win to get at home. And, you know, they had to come back. Oregon did take a late lead up 35-34, and then ASU just marched right back down the field, kicked a field goal with about 2.5 minutes to go, and then had to deal with Oregon's offense twice and shut them down on downs twice in a row. So I think there's a lot of encouragement you can take if you're ASU's defense from this, but they've still got a tough road ahead.
Yeah, I thought Manny Wilkins had a huge game. Arizona State just started off fast, which I think if you're a Sun Devil fan, it's a little frustrating to see how well they can play, because they just came out like gangbusters. They scored. I think Oregon scored. They scored again. Then they did an onside kick, sneak attack that worked, and they got a field goal out of that. So really it was like a blitzkrieg kind of thing, like Oregon, you know, doing the old Oregon to Oregon. And I agree with you. I thought Oregon could have ran the ball more in the second half. Like, they're good. Their passing game is usually guys wide open because you have to respect the run so much. So I think they tried to rely on the pass a little too much. But there was some bad defensive breakdowns from Oregon's defense, which kind of, you know, what we thought there would be before. Arizona State converted on a 3rd and 27. It was a 52-yard bomb to N'Keal Harry, which I love. I hate 3rd and 27, like run up the middle or a little dump off. Like, throw a ball down the field, you know, like you can get a pass interference. You can pick up a first down cheaply somehow. So I like that. And it worked. It was a beautiful play. But Wilkins ended up with 24-39. 347 yards and a touchdown. He rushed for two more touchdowns. And Harry had 7 catches for 170 yards, so that was his career high. Herbert, I mean, he had 4 total TDs too, you know, a bunch of them rushing. And I thought Arizona State played well, which, like I said, probably frustrating to know that you can play this well. You know, you didn't look that good against San Diego State. You didn't look that good against New Mexico State. It just, you know, they looked a lot better. And this was we forgot to mention the previous game. I believe Stanford has 10 straight wins over UCLA. Arizona State had lost 10 straight to Oregon dating back to 2004. So that was one streak in the last segment we talked about continued. This streak ended at 10 games.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this game kind of maybe takes the top off of Oregon's potential for this year, or puts a firm top on, I should say. I don't think this is a team that's probably going to compete for the Pac-12 North. This exposed a few flaws. I still think it's a solid, like, probably 8-4, maybe even 9-3 team, but I think there's a little bit more work to be done for Willie Taggart and company. This coming week, they will also play at 7:30 Pacific, so I will never be able to pay full attention to an Oregon game because they will play alongside UCLA until the end of time. On Fox Sports 1, Cal is coming to Eugene for what should be a fun showdown, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit.
Yeah, so good one there. That should be a really interesting one. Cal going to Eugene. Arizona State, we'd mentioned, we'll play at Stanford. We'll talk about that when we get to Stanford. So we had Oregon number 9, number 8.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Who we just talked about. And then, yeah. Well, we got to go over the numbers, you know, so it's like.
This makes zero sense. We really need to figure this out.
We'll have to figure it out at some point. We're not figuring it out right now. So we'll move on to number 7.
Colorado Buffalo.
Buff Stampede. And
Buff Stampeded.
They took on
Washington Huskies.
This was really bad.
Yes.
So this one I watched, like, so this is the one I had on concurrent with the UCLA Stanford game. Like, I had this one on the iPad while I was watching the UCLA Stanford game. And every time I looked down, just something bad was happening for Colorado. They were getting, you know, just shut out on another drive, just drive after drive after drive. This Washington defense just shutting them down. And, you know, Washington won 37-10. And it wasn't even really like an offensive explosion for Washington. I just thought their defense was just so much better than Colorado's offense in this game. They were just, I think it was maybe worse than the game these two teams played last year. You know, Colorado actually did a nice job against Jake Browning, but for the first time this year, Washington was able to run the ball. And when they can run the ball and also play defense the way they did, Steven Montez threw no touchdowns and three interceptions, kind of making us look very stupid for saying he's better than Sefolu-Fal. He hasn't had a great start to the year. Colorado wasn't really able to rush the ball either. And it just kind of snowballed. The second half was just all Washington, just kept turning turnovers into points, and just, yeah, this was ugly. It was an ugly, ugly game. And, you know, I think if you're Colorado, I don't know how much you can take from it, but Washington, I think, you know, I had a few doubts about Washington just because of their inability to run the ball against the two FBS opponents that they'd played so far, against Fresno State and against Rutgers, which are not good FBS opponents. But Miles Gaskin going off for 200 yards and a couple of touchdowns in this one is obviously huge. And that answers a lot of those questions. And, yeah, I mean, I think this was a bit of a statement win, I think, for Washington to open up conference play. And I think it sets them up as, you know, especially with the way USC has maybe looked a little shaky, sets them up as, I think, the conference favorite at this point.
Yeah. Lots of rain just the beginning of this one. And so the worst news, Dave, besides the not covering that we thought was going to happen, Ralphie didn't run. It was too much rain. So yeah. Our buddy Cal Bonagoro was supposed to run like behind Ralphie and, get, you know, some footage and stuff. He wasn't going to be like one of the handlers, but he would be out there running. He didn't tweet anything about if he got to run. They had Chip, like the stuffed mascot or whatever it is, like the person mascot. I guess Chip ran.
That's nice.
But I didn't see if Kyle got the run. I don't think there'd be a lot of fun running behind a person in a suit, but that was bad. So Colorado was up 7-0 early and looked pretty good. Then they get a punt blocked and Washington punched it in. It's just one of those games where you knew you can't make mistakes like that. Washington's just too well coached and, you know, but yeah, there's some good things. I think Isaiah Oliver, you know, we saw he's one of the better cornerbacks in the conference, and he did a really good job on Dante Pettis. I think he only had like three catches. But Montez, like you mentioned, he had three interceptions. That's a career high. He threw for more yards than, Jake Browning. He had 171, Browning 160. So if you're a big fan of like the passing game, this wasn't, you know, really the game for you. And I guess the disappointing part is that Washington secondary had some injuries. It was pretty much depleted, and Montez still struggled, you know. Browning really had no pressure, but he still, you know, he was only 11 of 21. I thought his numbers could have been better since he really wasn't even touched back there. But Miles Gaskin had a huge, I mean, they didn't really need him because Gaskin ran for 202 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And this was, I guess, another streak, 8-game home winning streak for Colorado ended on this one. And one last little note I had, if you watched two of the first, I think it was the first two interceptions from Colorado, Washington rushed three guys, Dave. They put three men against five offensive linemen and another one, it was six. They had like a tight end held back. And they still got pressure and forced Montez to throw it before he wanted to, and they both ended up in picks. So if you can get pressure with just three dudes, obviously the Colorado offensive line had some problems, but that's awesome if you're able to do that. That's just so helps your defense. All those guys back in coverage, they can pick off a bad pass, and that's exactly what Washington did.
Yep. And so Colorado moves on, as we talked about just a second ago, moves on to take on UCLA on Saturday on ESPN2, 7:30. in Pasadena. We don't have a line on this one yet because we're recording on a Sunday. But, you know, the way I'm looking at all UCLA games going forward is can UCLA's offense score touchdowns on, say, 80% of drives? Because if they can, then they have a chance of hanging in. Because the other team's offense, again, pretty much no matter who that offense is probably going to do that at about a 70% clip. So if UCLA can do that, they can win games. If they can't, they're not going to. Colorado's defense is decent. I thought they were decent against Washington. Yeah, they gave up a lot on the ground, but that actually matches up pretty well against UCLA, which doesn't really, you know, show much ability to run the ball. They've been a little bit better in recent weeks, but haven't really shown it over the long haul. And their pass defense was really good against Jake Browning. Now it comes on the road. Might be a little bit of a disappointing spot for Colorado after, they're probably pretty pumped up for the Washington game, so it might be a little bit of a letdown spot. But I'd probably take, I don't know what the line is going to be. I would imagine UCLA will be favored by something like 3 or 4. I'd probably take Colorado outright. So if it's UCLA -3 or 4, I'm definitely taking the Buffs, and we'll see. But I think I'm picking Colorado to win regardless.
I think I'm going to agree with you on this one, Dave. I don't know, man. I just had a lot of faith in UCLA to kind of let me down. Colorado obviously let us down too. So these are both kind of let down teams as far as at least what I thought was going to happen over the weekend. But I like the way the Colorado, defense is playing. That they just made some mistakes against a really good Washington team that you can't do. And I don't think you're going to have to play that perfect against UCLA. So we'll see what the line is. We'll update the site, but as of now, we'll both be picking Colorado.
Yeah, and then Washington, as we talked about, is taking on Oregon State, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. Okay. So that was Colorado. So our number six team,
California Golden Bears.
They took on
USC Trojans.
All right. So this was maybe, aside from Utah, Arizona, probably the most interesting game of the weekend for me, because we had this one, I think, pegged pretty right when we were talking about it. You know, Cal's sneaky decent. USC is sneaky, maybe not a top five team. With all their struggles kind of through the first 3 weeks of the season. So this set up, USC was favored by 17. It just seemed like a nice spot to take Cal in those points.
Yeah.
USC won 30-20, but it kind of got a little bit out of hand late. For most of this game, it was really competitive. This was a 13-13 game at halftime. And honestly, at a few different junctures, it looked like Cal might take control of the game. They looked pretty good. The fundamental issue for Cal in this one is that Ross Bowers just kind of lost, I don't want to say lost his mind late, but just kind of started to force things when he really didn't need to. I think Cal's still kind of figuring out its identity. And if you were just watching this game and you had no idea who the coaches for Cal were or whatever, you would have said, Cal looks like a very strong running team with a very good defense that just needs to manage the game passing the ball. And instead, it seems like they really want to be able to throw the ball at a high clip, and they don't want to have to run the ball too much. This game was 52 total passes, but 50 passes for Bowers versus 33 rushes. And it was 33 rushes for 113 yards, but that includes sacks. I thought they actually ran the ball pretty darn well and should have kept running at USC because they were getting a nice push up the middle. Vic and Wary really inexplicably had 8 carries for 44 yards, and then I don't think he touched the ball over the last like half of this game. It was just very strange. But I thought Cal just, Cal's got, there's a lot to like about Cal. They brought some aggressive defense against USC. They held this offense down pretty darn well. Kept them from running all over them. Kept Sam Darnold from going off in a big way. Sam Darnold only threw one pick, but he easily could have thrown three.
Yeah.
But Cal just kind of lost it late. I think it was a lot. Just they're still trying to figure out their philosophy, and I think they just tried to throw the ball too much. I think they need to kind of get maybe do some self-evaluation and realize what their strength is this year and maybe work towards what they want to be later on.
And this was another streak game. I believe it's now 14 straight years that USC's beat Cal, something like that. So quite a bit. I thought both defenses were the stars here. I think, you know, Tim DeRuiter and Justin Wilcox, they were able to disrupt a lot of what USC wanted to do. Forced Darnold, I mean, like you said, could have had more picks than he did. There were some really bad decisions. I think one of, you know, there was only one of his completions that was 10 yards or more downfield. So they really limited what he could do down the field. And with that, you know, Ronald Jones was out. I thought Stephen Carr did fine, but like, you know, the main running back out, I think that hurt USC a little bit. I thought the offensive line played poorly at times. Some penalties, just some blown assignments, things like that. But, you know, USC forced 6 turnovers in the game. So, like you said, like if you looked at what Cal was going to do, hey, just don't make mistakes. Just, like, manage the game. But the USC defense, I think they just, for a redshirt freshman quarterback, they did a lot of stuff that, you know, looked one way at the snap, and then it looked differently when they would run it. And they played some dime. They were, you know, didn't do much of that yet this year or any of that. So they dropped a lot of guys back into coverage, and it just seemed to work. It seemed to confuse Bowers and led to a bunch of turnovers, especially late. USC had actually only forced 1 turnover in their first 2 games, and they forced 10 over the last 2. So, but, you know, Cal plays defense now, Dave. Like, they're playing some D. Cal outgained USC in this game. So it was, like you said, close, you know, till late, and then USC pulled away. I tweeted this, it was a backdoor cover. So like USC, I mean, you don't think USC is going to cover a 17-point spread. Someone said it wasn't a backdoor cover that USC covered. They were up 30-13, but it was tied at 13, right? I mean, yeah. You know, so that's why I felt it was kind of a backdoor thing where USC just piled on some points late, put some subs in, and then Cal gets an extra touchdown. So we got our cover.
Yeah, no, I was very happy with the result, but, Let's go through Cal's possessions in the second half, because I think this is kind of instructive.
Okay.
So the first drive of the second half for Cal, they drive straight down the field, just going at USC, and they get the ball down to the 12, and then Matt Anderson. So did you watch the TV angle of his field goal?
Yes, I did see that.
It looked like it might have been good.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like it. I mean, yeah, okay, it's a tough one to gauge because it's going essentially over the pole, but it looked good. But anyway, they ruled it a miss, and it's fine. You know, it was kind of going either way. And then after that, Cal turned it over on downs at USC 42. Then after a USC field goal, with one play at the, I think, Cal 9, Bowers gets sacked, strip fumble, and USC gets it on, like, the 4. They score a touchdown. Then he goes out there and throws a pick on like his second play. Then SC scores another touchdown. Then he goes out there and throws another interception. And this is after like they put together a decent drive again. Like they were, you know, moving a little bit against USC, and then it was a 3rd and 9, and he just kind of throws up another arm punt. And then SC gets the ball again, and then he comes out there again and throws another pick. If at any point, because the Cal defense was actually holding a little bit, if he's just not out there throwing arm punts, if they're just trying to run the ball maybe, because there was still plenty of time left. They were down 10 with like 13 minutes to go in the game. In the Pac-12, that's an eternity. And with the way Cal was able to run the ball, especially early on in this game with Vic and Wary, you know, they bounced a lot of runs outside where they were getting big chunks of yardage. It felt like the coaching staff kind of mismanaged that game late for Cal. I think they could have kept it closer, but they just kind of, I think they want to be a little bit more of a passing team. It's pretty clear that's the way they want to go. I don't know if Bowers is ready yet to shoulder the load in a 50 plus pass game, against a defense as good as USC's. I mean, it's obvious he isn't because he threw 4 picks or whatever, but, I just thought, The coaching staff didn't put them in the best position late. I thought Cal could have kept this closer, could have kept it much more competitive into the fourth if they had decided they were going to be an air raid team there at the end.
All right. And then should we talk about the upcoming game?
Yeah, let's do it. So Cal is taking on Oregon in Eugene. Like we said earlier, this is a 7:30 kick on Fox Sports 1. Don't have a line on this one yet, and we'll do our official picks when we get the lines and put them up on the Pac-12 podcast website. This is a really interesting one because it actually is two contrasting styles. I think Oregon is kind of the all offense, you know, kind of shaky defense, and Cal, in this weird new era we're in, is more of a, you know, pretty strong defensive team that's going to do some nice things offensively at times, but isn't necessarily going to light up the scoreboard. I think I like Oregon at home. I think I'd take Oregon up to like a -7 or so. I think they'll bounce back from ASU. I think Cal's good though. I think, you know, they should be able to do, I mean, they shut down USC's rushing attack fairly well. I think they could do something similar to Oregon. I mean, ASU kind of showed the blueprint this past week. But I think I would take Oregon. I think at home they're gonna bounce back. And I think they'll be able to run the ball a little bit against Cal. And I think Cal might have a little bit of a letdown after expending what was probably a lot of energy against USC this past week.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I'm curious to see what this line is, but I think probably something where, yeah, up to like a touchdown or so, I would still take Oregon at home. You know, Wilcox, I'm sure, had that USC game circled. The coach that fired him, you know, a year and a half or whatever before, a couple years before that. So, yeah, we'll see what the line is. We'll put that up, like Dave said. We'll put it up on the Podcast of Champions website. All right.
And then USC is taking on Washington State on the road in Pullman at 7:30 on ESPN, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. And then, so our number five team in the rankings.
Stanford Cardinal.
So we can talk about their game now.
Yeah, so Stanford, as we said, beat up on UCLA. They might have gotten right. And they're taking on ASU at home at 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 network. So ASU kind of got right a little bit against Oregon, and Stanford very much got right against UCLA. And now we'll get to test whether those are mirages or not. I tend to think Stanford has gotten it together. The question for me is whether David Shaw recognizes it, right? Whether he recognizes that KJ Costello is their starting quarterback now. And I don't know the extent of what happened to Keller Crist, whether he's going to be back. But I think this is one of those situations where injury kind of dictated that they maybe found their starter. And they were searching for an answer in the passing game, and I think Costello might have provided it. It brought much more balance to the offense, and suddenly they looked a little bit more like the Stanford we expected at the beginning of the year. Now, the defense still isn't great. UCLA was able to move the ball against them pretty well, got up almost 600 total yards. ASU's offense has been fine this year, fine to good. So I think this one could be relatively high scoring. I think if, you know, the over-under is set at 60, I would probably take the over. But I think I would, this is kind of like the Oregon-Cal game for me. I think I would take Stanford, maybe even more than that. I'd probably take Stanford up to -10 in this one. I think they've got, I think they might be able to get it rolling a little bit now. And obviously, you know, it's hard to take too much from that game, but I think if they stick with Costello, they might be able to get it rolling a little bit.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, you know, I've always felt Stanford was going to be a good team, and, you know, I kind of feel like they are now. I feel like they're going to be there. So I will take, I'm going to take Stanford this one too. We'll see what the line is. We'll put all their picks in there. Unless it's something ridiculous, I think I would take Stanford here. I'm not sure. I mean, Arizona State, the problem is, like, you know, Stanford's run defense has been questionable. I mean, they give up 100 yards to, you know, UCLA running back. I don't know when's the last time that happened for UCLA. If they had a 100-yard running back for a while, it's been...
They've probably had it a couple of times. Okay. You know, there have been these rare instances, but yeah.
But not too much. Yeah, so, but... And we've seen Arizona State run the ball really well sometimes and then just to get away from it. But Wilkins is playing really well. I just get a feeling this is going to be a Stanford team that starts to hit its stride and do well. So
yeah, if UCLA cured Stanford.
Yeah. So if they fall flat on their face, then you can blame us because we still are believing in Stanford.
Yep.
All right, cool. So we'll go to our number four team.
Utah Utes.
All right, so we already recapped Utah against Arizona. And they, you know, did what they needed to do. And now this week, they are on a bye, which could not have come at a better time for them. This gives maybe Tyler Huntley a little bit of time to heal up. If it's a separated throwing shoulder, I mean, I don't know that any amount of time to heal up is really going to get him right, but it's a nice time for a bye just because it'll get Troy. You know, if you were watching the Utah-Arizona game, the way they kept doing close-ups of Troy Williams looking over to the sideline for the play every single time, and it gave me the feeling that maybe he's a little rusty on just, you know, getting the play in from the sideline and the whole thing. It felt like they were a little slow getting it in a couple of times. There was one play where they got it down to like the 5-yard line and they had to call a timeout or they got a delay of game. I can't remember which, because they just didn't get the play going quickly enough because he kept looking over to the sideline for the play. They just didn't seem to be playing as fast with him. So maybe this gives them a week to kind of get him ready to go, get him in rhythm, and then have him ready for the following week's game.
Yeah. So we have number 4. I don't know. You feel that's fair, Dave? Like, you know, at BYU, pretty good win. They beat up on San Jose State.
Huntley had been healthy in this game and they'd won it by another touchdown, I would have probably pressed for them to be, like, number 3.
Okay.
But Williams kind of... He's just not the player that Huntley is. Yeah. I think if Huntley was healthy, I think this team is potentially a contender in the South. But with Williams, I just don't know that the offense has that extra gear.
All right. We'll jump up. So our number 3 team,
Washington State Cougars.
All right. So this was a game I picked horribly. So Washington State had Nevada at home. And every, like, single detail about Nevada should have led me to pick Washington minus literally whatever, but I think it was Washington State minus 28. But instead I picked Nevada for just some stupid reason, and Washington State won 45-7. The 7, like, so I watched a disturbing amount of this first half, especially. And the,
I did too,
the 7,
yeah.
I'm shocked Nevada scored 7. They were so inept offensively. And it stands to reason because their head coach is Jay Norvell, who was once an offensive coordinator for Carl Durrell at UCLA. And that was one of the worst offenses I can remember. I think that was that 2007 team that was very bad. They were horrible throwing the ball, horrible rushing the ball. And Washington State's defense is pretty good. And this was just, this was ugly. It was so ugly.
Yeah.
Washington State didn't run the ball, couldn't really run the ball. It didn't matter. Luke Falk just threw it all over the place. It was ugly. Not a whole lot else to say, but Nevada stinks, and Washington State is 4-0.
Yeah. So I had this one right. I was happy about that. It was 27.5 we had, so I was like, yeah, they're going to win by at least 4 touchdowns. But they were up 35-0 at the half. Washington State didn't punt in the first half, so that was kind of cool. Falk was, you know, so this was his line. 20 of 29, 308 yards, 4 touchdowns in the first half. You know, so he got his 100th passing touchdown, so he's 3rd in Pac-12 history. 478 passing yards, 5 touchdowns. Nevada had only run 35 plays heading into the fourth quarter. So Washington State picked him off, Nevada off 3 times. They had 5 sacks. So it just, you know, we don't have to talk about it too much. But if you watch some of the post-game stuff, Mike Leach wasn't exactly happy how they played in the second half, but their theme is like that we got a week better. He's like, we're a week better. So it's, and you know, I think Luke Falk said the same thing afterwards. So this is some kind of theme that they use, and we're trying to get a week better every week. So, but they looked like they got a week better. I mean, it was a really weak team they played, but they definitely played better.
You know, they got a week better, but we were pretty weak betters this week.
You nice. Did there? You did. Well, we were 3-3. It wasn't like, awful.
Do you see what I did there?
I did. Yes. I was trying to. Hopefully, people didn't notice and we could move on.
No, it was great. That was great. So what was great about it is, like, I'm sitting at my computer, right? And I've got this headset mic attached to my head, but I still leaned in like I was telling a really good joke. But, like the area of, like, the ratio of my mouth to this mic did not change, so there was no effect of that except I was doing that in the comfort of my own home. Anyway, so Washington State is taking on our number 2 team.
Our number 2 team is
USC Trojans.
See, I set that up right there.
You
like
did.
That? On Friday at 7:30 p.m., I'm going to stay up and watch this game because Well, I just hate myself, so that'll be two nights in a row that I'll be up till about 2-3 in the morning watching football. USC going at Washington State in Pullman on ESPN on Friday. Two ranked teams. You know, Washington State is, I don't know if they're 16 now or if they're going to be even a little bit higher, but number 5 versus number 16. This is really, really interesting. So this is a game that everyone had circled, I think, from even before the season started as a potential trap game for USC. Now I don't even think if it's necessarily a trap game. I think it's a legit, you know, this is one that USC probably should have had circled as, wow, that's going to be a prove-it game for us. And especially in light of the way, you know, they scuffled at home against Western Michigan. You know, they beat Stanford, but then they scuffled at home against Texas. And then had some issues against Cal this past week. I think this is a game where they can try to prove it a little bit. And Washington State, I think their defense is pretty good. We're going to see how, you know, good Luke Falk can be against a secondary that's been pretty good at making turnovers in the last couple of games. I have no feel for what the line on this game is going to be.
Yeah, I'm just not sure. Like, is it USC, I think it'll by be like USC 5 by or something?
3 or 4, something okay. like that.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking.
And I don't know if I'm... So basically, what you're saying, if you pick Washington State plus 3 or plus 4, you're saying there's a pretty good chance they win.
Yeah.
Yeah, give me the Cougs.
Nice.
Give me the Cougs. I haven't liked much. I mean, I think USC... They just haven't quite shown it for me yet. They've shown it in bursts, right? You know, they've had moments against Stanford, but, you know, that was a Stanford team that was already kind of getting into the struggle situation they had against San Diego State. I just haven't quite seen it from them for a consistent enough period, and I think Washington State's playing at a pretty high level. Bill Connolly, who does a lot of the, you know, advanced stats for SB Nation, If you took out all preseason projections, Washington State looks like a top 10 team right now, and USC kind of doesn't. So, and that's, you know, obviously it's a small sample size, only 4 games and different competition for sure. But yeah, I think I like the Cougs.
So I have not picked, USC to cover 1 point spread this year, and I've been, pretty good, 3-1. The only one they covered was Stanford. Unless it's more than a touchdown, I'm going to take USC in this one. I just feel like this will be one of those games where they bounce back and focus and they'll win. So I think, I think unless it's some like line that we just don't expect that's going to be really high.
There's no way it'll be higher than 7.
Okay.
I just can't see it.
So I'll pick, USC in this one, just by kind of my gut. I mean, sometimes like you watch a team and they're like kind of fumbling around and bumbling and stuff and then, I'm not saying they're like turning around and they're going to play better, but I just feel like they're going to play better in this game. So
yeah, it's totally on the table. I'm just going to go with what they've done the last few weeks.
Yeah. Oh, totally makes sense. Okay. And then we got one, last game to preview. So if you noticed, there's a little shakeup at the top of our power rankings. We dropped USC a spot and we moved up
Washington Huskies.
And obviously we did that on the strength of a big road win, a convincing road win over Colorado versus USC, kind of scuffling a little bit against Cal. So Washington now on Saturday at 5 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network is going to Oregon State. I don't even really want to preview this. I think it's going to be disgusting. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think it's going to qualify as abuse. I think Washington is going to be favored by 28.
You think so?
It's going to be by so much, man. Like 24-28 would be where I'm thinking that is going to be, and I'm taking Washington.
Okay.
I'm taking Washington. Like I'd be like pretty comfortable with the Washington pick up to like -34. Like this Oregon State team's just bad. They're just bad.
Yeah, I mean it's a road game and everything, and Oregon State had a bye week and. You know, it's like back-to-back road games. But yeah, I would really not feel, I don't think I'd sleep well saying, yeah, give me Oregon State in those points.
No.
What, unless those points are like a whole lot, like 3 digits, then we're, you know, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I think it's going to be, I think Washington rolls. But we'll get the lines and we'll post those up for sure. We'll, I think you guys got a feel for what our picks are. We have a good feel for it, and then we'll see if any of the lines look like kind of ridiculous, and we'll go from there.
Right. We're just going to record on Sundays from now on because I do a lot better picking games when we
– No, we can't stop doing that.
On like Thursday.
I forgot to mention at the top that we are recording on a Sunday, so you get a little early, everybody.
Yeah, isn't that great for you? And you can tell by our level of organization that we were well prepared for this.
We were, yeah. I mean, we kind of figured that out this morning, or yeah, I think it was this morning or something. USC actually play on Friday, so we normally record Monday afternoons, and USC is going to practice Monday afternoons now, so I wasn't going to be able to do that. Dave had a work thing too, so we're like, well, let's just do it Sunday. I don't mind doing Sundays except for the lines.
Our lines.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, that's our big calling card is how much money you can make. Listening to our dumb ramblings about these stupid teams.
Since we both were 3-3, our records are, you know, like, you know, almost the same. 23-18. Dave is, ahead of me. I'm 19-22. So, under 500, which I was really thinking I was going to get back up, you know, to even this weekend. I thought all my games were good, but the night games did not go the way we thought. Let's do the voicemail question, Dave.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Hey, guys. Ernesto from Temecula. Just curious, after 3 weeks, how the Pac-12 has fared over other conferences and wins and losses. And also want to get your take on that number, the wins versus losses. Are you guys surprised? Are you guys feel that the ratio is correct? Let me know what you guys think. Thanks for the podcast. Keep up the great job.
All right. Thanks for that. So I pulled up some stats for you. So let's see. So the Pac-12 overall actually has the highest winning percentage against the other Power 5 conferences. So Pac-12 is 6-2. Played fewer games than the other conferences too. The ACC overall is 5-8. The Big 12 is 4-6. The Big 10 is 7-5. And the SEC is 5-6. So only two conferences have a winning record, the Pac-12 and the Big 10. And then you break it down, the Pac-12 is 1-0 against the ACC, 1-1 against the Big 12, 2-1 against the Big 10, and 2-0 versus the SEC. So, so big win. Ole Miss was a big win, and Texas A&M for UCLA, that was a big win. So those are the two, SEC teams. So that was pretty good.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to a willingness for the Pac-12, the top teams in this league, to play kind of marquee opponents more than you see from some other leagues.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of speaks to it. But yeah, pretty good question.
Cal got two of those wins.
I know.
That's pretty good, huh?
Cal is the banner carrier for the league.
Yeah.
So we've got some email questions. You want me to get into one?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so this is from Hithloday Almond, who I think has asked a few questions in the past. Revenue and recruiting. Last week you got a question asking if Larry Scott would admit that low Pac-12 revenues resulted in poor Pac-12 recruiting and therefore a bad Pac-12 season. You guys properly set aside the typical nonsense about Scott being a double agent trying to destroy the conference from within, but then punted on the interesting part of the question by essentially saying, well, we haven't seen if it'll actually be a bad season yet. I'd like to hear your opinion on what exactly the relationship is between revenue and recruiting. I tend to think that lower Pac-12 revenue compared to the Big Ten and SEC is unavoidable because fans out here just aren't as rabid about football, but it seems to me that all Pac-12 schools are either A, pretty wealthy on their own, or B, getting enough money to meet their realistic recruiting goals, given other limitations like geography, historical success, etc. I've always figured that once you reach a certain point where you have good facilities and can identify and go after your targets, revenue beyond that point has severely diminishing returns and is just used as a expletive measuring contest. Dick measuring contest. It's fine. It's fine. We're an adult.
Can we say that? Can we say that? Okay.
Yeah, whatever. As Pac-12 recruiting experts, I'd like your take on whether that impression is true, and if so, whether it is the case that all 12 schools are at or beyond that threshold. Great question.
Yeah.
So my take on this is there's a few areas where you're spending revenue, right? And I think the two ones that are critical for recruiting, I mean, yeah, you want to have like some private jets or whatever available and some private, you know, ability to get around quickly. UCLA's used a helicopter in the past. I'm sure USC's done similar things, used private jets to recruit, that sort of thing. But that's not, these aren't like huge big ticket items. Those are things that can be solved with the current level of revenue. I think the big things are facilities, because those are multi-million dollar things that you have to invest a ton of money in, and coaching salaries, because that's partly you're hiring a great coach, but partly you're hiring a great recruiter. And I don't know that it, you know, I mean, salaries are going to continue to inflate. I think Nick Saban's making like $8 million a year now or whatever. But I tend to agree with your position that at a certain point, it really is just, you know, who's making more money, like as if that's the goal rather than actually using it for a purpose. I think the Pac-12 network revenue more speaks to, I mean, just from a pure fan enjoyment standpoint, the Pac-12 not being in enough televisions is just stupid for the brand, for the league, for fans of these teams. But from a money perspective, I don't know enough about the ins and outs of a lot of the lower level schools in the league, but I think everyone's making enough money except for Cal, which is bankrupt. but pretty much everyone else, I think, is making enough money to recruit the way they want to recruit. And I think regional recruiting is, I think it's just easier to recruit kind of the Pac-12 because you make your LA trip and then you recruit locally a little bit. That's, you know, pretty much the long and the short of it. But yeah, I don't know. What's your take on this?
So yeah, I think, you know, Dave hit some great points there. It's not just the coaching salaries though. I mean, the support staff, you look at the schools that have like enormous support staffs that help recruiting, and even a school like USC, they got like a couple of guys that kind of help out with recruiting. And, you know, Alabama might have like 20, you know, I mean, they're spending a lot of money on that. Now, it's different, I think, recruiting on the West Coast. You could talk about the interest. It's harder to get a kid, you know, you get kids that can move from California to Alabama. I mean, that happens. But, you know, for the most part, you can keep guys on the West Coast and the whole Pac-12 can benefit from the talent that is around. And I think it helps. So it's not like, if you make $1 million less dollars, that means you lose two recruits. I mean, it's just, it doesn't equate like that. I think there was, because everyone's made more money, it's allowed the Pac-12 to hire coaches. I think it's allowed the Pac-12, a lot of the schools, or most of them, if not all of them, have upgraded facilities to a point. But I think the day-to-day stuff, like if you want to have a bigger recruiting staff, bigger support staff that aren't part of the assistants, I don't think you're going to be able to afford that. And even though a school is rich, I know USC had like a $6 billion fundraising goal that they did over the last like 10 years, and they got to it. But that's not money that goes to the athletic department. That's money for the school, you know, because they only, right, they only charge $70,000 a year for tuition. So you need to make money other places too, I guess. But, you know, besides that, but yeah, so I think it's, the support staff, I think, is really important. And I don't think it's like you said, it's a dollar to recruiting thing, but I think over time, it will hurt the schools because each year the gap is widening. And I get that it's not as passionate of a fan base, but just because of that doesn't mean you have to accept, you know, below average returns. And there's been some really bad decisions made by the Pac-12 on the network, and having all the regional networks, I think, is one of the bad decisions. And if you want to read John Wilner's latest piece, it came out mid last week about Pac-12 network ratings. It's very damning. So the Pac-12 Network does not release ratings. They won't tell you. They don't tell the schools what the ratings are. And the schools own the network. So they don't even tell their own owners what their ratings are. And what John Wilder found out, the reason why most likely, is they took last year over a four-weekend period of football season the ratings of the Olympic sports. Because the whole point of the Pac-12 Network is like, we want to get all these Olympic sports on, so we'll do these regional networks and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's pretty much pointless if nobody's watching. So they did 21 of 22 of the segments, which are 15-minute segments in the network ratings world, got a zero share. It doesn't mean zero people are watching, but what that means is maybe like a couple hundred total. So that's what you're – all this production money that goes into – you spend a ton of money producing all these live events and putting all these sports on there, and literally nobody is watching. The football one did fine. It got like an 11, like a home football game got 11, out of area one got like a 3. Like if you just had one network and you had good distribution and you put the stuff that people want to watch on it, the Pac-12 network would be fine. But they want to do all these other sports, and literally no one is watching. So it's, yes, I guess, you know, it's not the SEC as far as passionate fan bases. There will be some kind of discrepancy, but the discrepancy to me is huge, getting bigger, and they're making so many bad decisions that it's only going to get worse. And it doesn't have to be as bad as they're making it, as I guess I would say.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. So good question. Good yeah. fun. All right, we've got another email question. Rosen versus Darnold. Hey, Dave, the bearded one, and Ryan, the only Trojan I find likable. How do you compare Rosen to Darnold on a curve? It seems to me USC has a better O-line and a far better rushing attack to take defensive pressure off Darnold, so what Rosen does in comparison with less is more impressive. Am I wrong? Thoughts?
Well,
I thought about this a little.
Rosen had a 100-yard rusher, and USC didn't have that last weekend, so I don't know, man. It's true. It is true.
True. Well said. Yeah, I mean, this is one of – so Rosen's playing a lot better this year than I think he played last year and even played as a freshman. I think even with the picks in the last couple of games where he's been trying to force it just because he has to be so – you know, he has to score a touchdown every time he touches the ball for UCLA to even have a chance of winning a football game. But I think Rosen's been special so far this year. Darnold, I think I've watched – I think pretty much every minute of every USC game so far, same with UCLA. And I would say my take on Darnold is he has a little bit more security because the rest of the team is so good. And so he can take a few more chances in the passing game. And so he's doing some things this year that I didn't see from him last year where he's, you know, rolling to his right and he just decides, all right, whatever, I'm going to uncork this one and see if I can, you know, make an incredible throw here. And, you know, he's throwing more picks because of it. And I don't know it's necessarily a bad thing. If you're trying to make plays downfield and you throw the occasional pick, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think he's throwing too many right now. I think he's up to whatever it is, 7 or 8 already this year. Comparing the two right now, I think it's kind of the same story as it was, you know, last year, which is from a college QB standpoint, Darnold with his ability to, you know, manage the pocket and avoid taking hits and keep plays alive. And, you know, in the clutch, he just makes plays. He might still have a slight edge, but Rosen's come on in that department this year. And I still think he's probably the better pro prospect at this point. But it's a close thing. I think it can go either way. I don't think you can make a wrong decision there. I think with the way the NFL is going, I think Darnold might even make a little bit more sense than he would have, say, 10 years ago, just because he's got a little bit more of that playmaking ability, and NFL offensive lines are getting so much worse that you kind of need to have that ability. I don't know. I could go either way. I could talk myself into it either way. What do you think?
Yeah, this is from G-Berg. Good question. I'm glad I'm the only Trojan you find likable. I thought you said tolerable. Then it's likable. That's good. No, likable is better.
Yeah,
I mean, it depends. I mean, what are you ranking them, like, in the – best college quarterbacks? Are you saying who's going to go first in the draft? I mean, to me, it's like, I mean, when they play each other, it doesn't matter. They're never on the field at the same time. You know, USC's obviously got a better team around them. I mean, you know, are you saying,
Are you saying USC's better than UCLA this
no,
year?
No, I don't want to go on. We'll preview that in week 11 or whatever it is. But, yeah. So, but, you know, in this kind of situation, it's like, is it who's going to get more hype for like the high, like, because, you know, Rosen's not winning, you know, UCLA would have to be like a really highly ranked team for Rosen to really kind of be considered for the Heisman. That's why Darnold would be on that list. But, I think both are, when you talk to like NFL scouts, one of the ways they kind of put quarterbacks is sometimes there's guys that are like Bakers and sometimes they're like Cooks, where a Baker is more of a followed, you know, this is what you're supposed to do, what you kind of wanted to see Cal do in that game, where just, hey, don't make mistakes. Just follow along with the game plan and don't try to go off script, and we'll keep this close. And, like a Trent Dilfer was when he was playing with the Ravens, and they won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. And then Cooks are more like they'll, you know, it's not like following directions. It's like you get a little bit of this, a splash of that, and you're really kind of spicing things up on your own. And I actually think both Darnold and Rosen are like that. And that's something that's valued in the league. I mean, they have quarterbacks that are successful that just kind of like, or in the system and follow instructions. But I think these guys are both guys, they can go off script and kind of make things happen. Sometimes you see picks happen. We saw it, you know, this weekend, a couple near one, you know, Darnold had one and a couple near ones, and Rosen had a couple too. But I think they were trying to make plays, and maybe you make some bad decisions and do that. So it's hard for me to compare, like, who's the better, like, college quarterback. I mean, they're different. They do different things, but I think they're both really good. I think when it comes down to it, both will get drafted, like, in the top five, you know. And it's like, you know, if Darnold goes one and Rosen goes two, you know, does that mean, you know, it's just like whoever the team's there that they would rather have that guy. I just don't think it matters all that much. I think to me, they're both really exceptional quarterbacks. The city of LA is lucky to have both of them. But it's like, I don't know, what are you comparing the number one pick, or I don't know.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But it's I'm sure it's a question we'll keep debating for the next 20 years. All right. So this is from Zach, who emailed us last week. Garbage power rankings, he says.
That sounds like us.
Zach from NYC. Wow, what an incredible night for general garbage. It was an eclipse of trash, if you will. Our favorite $3.75 million a year gym teacher was at it again. I think he's referring to Jim Mora. Oh. But he wasn't alone in incompetence. Oh no, not on this special night. In honor of the portion of the season where UCLA's players had not yet quit and I still cared, please rank the following from worst to still horrible, but not the most garbage. Okay, so from the worst garbage to garbage, but not quite as bad garbage.
Okay.
Okay, we got it?
Yeah.
All right, he says Jim, G-Y-M, not a typo, Mora's coaching. Okay. Rod Gilmore's announcing. Okay, strong contender there. Pac-12 officials, very strong contender. UCLA's defense, obviously, we've talked about that. The targeting rule, Pac-12 officials' ability to interpret said targeting rule, Jaleel Wadud's chestiness after repeatedly getting toasted. Sidebar, seriously, how has no one brought this up to him? You can't celebrate after giving up 12 yards per carry. And my decision to continue watching UCLA games that start at 10:30 my time.
That's a good list, Zach.
There's a lot going on here. Man,
what do you think's the worst? Like, should we start with the best, like the least garbagey?
The least garbage thing here, I think, is the targeting rule itself.
Yeah.
Because I think it means well. I think it's being interpreted stupidly. I think it's being called stupidly. I think it's being reviewed stupidly. I don't mind the rule itself.
Yeah. I'm good with that one. But I think the Pac-12 officials' ability to interpret that rule. And there's three of these that have to do with officiating. That's got to be closer to the heaviest of the garbage, like the garbagey of the garbage.
Yeah, and you know, he's got one for Pac-12 officials in general, and then their ability to interpret the targeting rule. And so it's basically a question, is the ability to interpret the targeting rule more garbage than their general behavior? And I don't think so. I think their general behavior is garbage.
Yes.
And I think their ability to interpret said targeting rule is garbage, but it's garbage of a piece. And I think their general state of garbage impacts more of the game. So I'm going to put Pac-12 officials near the top of the garbage heap, and I'm going to put interpreting the rule below that.
Okay.
Maybe just right below that.
The Rod Gilmore thing, I'm not really like, nothing comes to mind. Like, I don't know.
He's medium garbage. He's right in the middle of this. He's not good. He's very bad, but I don't get excited about announcers because you can just mute him.
Okay. He's above the targeting rule.
Yeah. I think he's above the targeting rule, below their ability to interpret and the Pac-12 officials themselves.
Okay.
Now we have to get into the UCLA specific stuff, which is trickier for me. So I'm going to say, continuing to watch UCLA games that start at 10:30 your time, what I'm going to ask you, and I think it's more like this. If you are a single dude without children, or you just don't have children, that's not garbage at all. Whatever. It's 10:30 on a Saturday night. What else are you going to be doing? Just get drunk and watch a UCLA game. Whatever. So I don't think that's garbage. If you've got kids, yeah, it's awful. And if it's like somehow tangentially associated with your job, like it is for me, it's horrible. But for you, I think it's probably fine. You know, I don't think that's too garbage. So I'm going to put that right above the targeting rule, below Rod Gilmore's announcing in this garbage ranking.
I like that. All right.
So now we have three more things to deal with here. All right. So we've got UCLA's defense, Jim, G-Y-M, not a typo, Mora's coaching. And Jaleel Wadud's chestiness after repeatedly getting toasted. I'm going to say Jahlil Wadud's chestiness after repeatedly getting toasted is less garbage than those other two UCLA-related things, simply because this isn't a UCLA-specific thing. A lot of defensive players on a variety of teams will celebrate after the dumbest things.
Yeah.
Like after, oh, I just gave up a 20-yard pass, but I hit that guy really hard.
Yes.
I'm gonna celebrate like I just won the Super Bowl. So I think, you know, UCLA fans get excited about it because UCLA's defense is garbage, and we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. I always feel bad for that because, like, if I ever hit someone like that, I'm sure I'd want to celebrate too.
Yeah.
You know, we've never done something like that before, but you have to know what the context is. It's like they just gained 20 yards. Like, you probably shouldn't be celebrating.
Yeah. So I'm going to put this above Rod Gilmore's announcing in the garbage rankings. I'm going to put it above watching games at 10:30, above the targeting rule. I'm going to put it below the Pac-12 officials, though. Like, I think it's medium garbage.
Okay.
And now we get to the two things that I think are real contenders for the top spot.
Really? Okay.
Moore's coaching and the UCLA defense. This team doesn't look prepared. They don't look great out there. The defense in particular looks really bad. If your scheme is such that you require, so they lost five guys to the NFL last year, right? And that's gonna your defense is gonna take a hit. But if your scheme is such that for it not to be garbage, you need to be starting five NFL players, your scheme might be trash, right? Unless you're coaching at Alabama, your scheme might be terrible. So these are kind of a piece for me, so I'm going to put them tied for the top of the garbage heap, UCLA's defense and Moore's coaching.
I think that's a good one. I think you know Moore, obviously, on the UCLA side, so I'll trust your judgment on that one. That's a good – I like that, Zach. Good, little frustration, you can tell.
Yeah, I like that. You know, Moore, we would like that from all of you. All of you listeners out there, if you have garbage rankings you want to do for your particular team and you want us to help you rank them, we're happy to help.
Yeah.
That's what we do here. We rank garbage. We are not above that.
Very cool.
All right, that's it for emails.
Yeah, did we have any tweets? Let me see.
I don't think so.
Let's take a look real quick. Jay tweeted us. I tweeted out that I was at a bar that I was baffled that UCLA was losing. They were up by 7 with a chip shot field goal. And he said that should make for another Pac-12 podcast. So thanks for the tweet, Jay. We had one. So Big Easy 206 says, "Hey guys, was listening to your last podcast previewing." So this is actually a screenshot of that he tweeted at us, previewing Washington and Colorado. And Ryan had mentioned that Jake Browning seems to struggle against athletic teams while only being successful against lesser teams. I feel this is a common misconception because people only remember how he played versus USC, Colorado in the conference title game, and against Alabama, games where we had a busted throwing shoulder. People conveniently forget that he played well versus Utah. Yes, the numbers weren't spectacular, but he took what the defense gave him, leaned on the running game, was efficient, making big throws when they needed, not unlike what Sam Darnold did versus Texas, minus the efficiency part. Browning, when healthy, also torched a pretty athletic Stanford team in a big time game on a big stage. Your thoughts? You look at his numbers against Colorado this year too. It wasn't very good. He threw for 160 yards, and that's a good secondary. They pretty much shut down Dante Pettis. Washington won going away. So it's like he didn't have to do anything spectacular, but it wasn't like. He's just not ranked as high as some of the other quarterbacks. I think he has great coaching staff, better team around him than most just about anybody. But to me, when he plays those better teams, and we'll see, you know, they're going to win a whole bunch of games. They might win them all this year. But you know, they'll play a better Stanford secondary on the road. If Stanford's playing a little better, maybe that's a better game. But yeah, he actually, you know, torched them last year. Any thoughts, Dave? Or
yeah, I think. You know, we probably are suffering from a little bit of confirmation bias because, it's confirmation bias to a certain extent, but Jake Browning doesn't have the arm strength that you think of when you even think of, you know, Josh Rosen, when you think of Sam Darnold. He just doesn't have that arm that pops off the screen. And so it stands to reason logically that he's going to struggle against faster, more athletic defenses, right? Because they can get after his throws a little bit more. He tends to kind of loft them a little bit more. But that said, he's great at ball placement, great at putting it you know, where his receiver can get it, where the defense can't. And he's learned to compensate, I think, a little bit for his lack of that really plus arm. But we're talking about that and results, right? So they didn't play particularly well against USC, or he didn't play particularly well against USC, Colorado, or Bama last year, and Colorado this year. And that kind of jives with what we know about him as a player, you know, that he doesn't quite have that arm strength, and that he might struggle more against more athletic teams makes sense. And so, he had a busted shoulder, the whole deal, and, you know, I think we can maybe anticipate him playing better in those games, but I think it makes sense that he would struggle a little bit more against faster defenses. It just kind of fits the narrative a little bit more about him. But as always, we could be wrong. I mean, we've been wrong so much, like just so much, like a stunning amount of wrongness. It's amazing that we do this and people listen to it. Yeah. But I think that's more what it is. It's just kind of we've got two, you know, mega data points of Jake Browning against athletic teams. One, we know he doesn't have a very strong arm, and we know that he didn't play particularly well in those games last year. And even with the injury, it just kind of that fits from everything we know about him. So,
yeah. We had a tweet from BowDown79. He said, love the show, but did you just claim Oregon football was a Pac-12 North contender? So this was after last week's show.
I have no recollection of this.
The D that gave up 35 to Tanner Lee, and a bunch of smiley emojis. And then Sunspot Johns, he says, make love, not Warcraft, is his on his Twitter. He said, they are a contender. It's between Washington and Oregon. Stanford is too inconsistent. That's called being a contender dipshit. Then a bunch of crying, smiling, laughing emoji. I'm not very emoji literate, so I can't really tell you what they are, but whatever. Those kind of things.
He's crying, laughing, and the other one was just laughing.
Well, they are not a contender. The defense isn't as good as it's going to need to be, but they're better. After what we saw this past weekend, I do not feel that they are a contender. I think, you know, Stanford, I think, is still, they're kind of inconsistent, but I think they're getting better. They seem to be ramping up. That's just my thought. I don't know what you think, Dave.
Yeah, I completely agree.
But Washington, obviously Washington State's good. The Apple Cup should be pretty awesome this year, and, we'll know a lot more this weekend. There's some good games. I think that was about it, Dave.
Cool.
There's one, Dog for Life. Also with Washington football run offense, do some HW and look where they are.
He's asking us to do some homework. Oh. He's saying that this is the fact that they couldn't run the ball against friggin' Fresno State and Rutgers is all part of some plan.
Oh, okay.
So, whatever.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He had another tweet, too. Did you just claim more? Okay, so that was he followed up to that one. Okay, that was okay, I'm sorry. That was also BowDown 79. That was a follow-up. My bad. I didn't put the same ones together. All right. I think that's it for our show.
Cool. That was fun.
Yeah, it was good. We did an hour and a half. Only five games this week coming up, so maybe it'll be a little shorter show, and hopefully we'll have lines. But we'll put those up on Pac-12Podcast.com. But Dave, good stuff. Thanks, man.
Talk to you soon.
All right. That's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. We are the Podcast of Champions. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.